Now, Anselm turned himself, among many other problems, to an ingenious proof for the existence of God. And this, again, shows us this connection between things that exist in the mind and things that exist in the real world. He began with the statement of the fool in the Psalms, who said, "It seems there is no God." And he asked himself, is it possible for the fool to have in his mind the idea of something that does not actually exist in the world? Well, if you think of a leprechaun, for example, or a unicorn, you say, well, yes, that's possible. I can have something in my mind that doesn't exist in the world. But then Anselm says, God is that than which nothing greater can be conceived. For it would be absurd to imagine a being greater than God. Now, there must be a being than which no greater being can be conceived. And therefore, in this instance, something which exists in the mind must exist also in reality. Now, there are one or two problems with that form of reasoning. It's called ontological reasoning, but it is quite a remarkable leap. We might say leap of faith, no, leap of reason. Peter Abelard, who lived from 1079 to 1142, and whose beautiful lament on Jonathan we heard a few moments ago, used dialectical reasoning in one of his books, a book called The Sic et Non, that means yes and no, to show that in more than 100 cases, seeming contradictions, either in the Bible, particularly contradictions between the Old and the New Testament, or seeming contradictions in the writings of the Church Fathers, could, by the careful application of dialectic, of logic, be reconciled and be demonstrated to be not, in fact, contradictions at all. Now, what were some of the consequences of this increasing application of dialectic? Well, in the first place, logical reasoning began to be seen as equal to, and perhaps in a few instances at least, superior to authorities when settling a controverted issue. In the past, one would have heaped up authorities. Remember, Lanfranc began that way. Now we begin to see the application of formal logic as equal, maybe even superior. Now this began to call into question the respective spheres of faith and reason. Now, we've seen that Arab thinkers were interested in this question. We've seen that Jewish thinkers were interested in this question. So it's not surprising that eventually Christian thinkers began also to explore this very complicated subject. Logic had an impact on teaching methods and on scholarship in the medieval schools. We'll see couple of concrete examples of that in just a few minutes. But suffice it to say that in a world where logic reigns supreme, the way you teach and the way you study and the way you write will change just a little bit. Now, the enhanced status of logic is perhaps the key motor that drove the rise of what we call scholasticism. Now, this word is one that can be used and abused. It can have several distinct though related meanings. Let's explore this word a little bit. Key point here is that there isn't just one thing that scholasticism was or to which it attached. It can be, for example, in the first place, quite simply, a name for a period of time, especially the 12th and 13th centuries, when the competing claims of faith and reason were explored, and indeed were explored particularly by the application of dialectical reasoning. Now, we've already seen this in connection with Arab, Jewish, and Latin thinkers. And we'll return to this question a little bit later in connection with St. Thomas Aquinas. But first of all, scholasticism can mean exploring faith and reason by means of logic. Having said that, it's very important to emphasize that the great logicians of the Middle Ages were not rationalists in the modern sense. Reason was for them a means to an end. It was not an end in itself. Human reason was not final, was not complete, and was not perfect. Anselm's motto, for example, was faith seeking understanding. He began by believing, and then he set out to understand. Now, it's worth emphasizing that there were thinkers, for example, St. Bernard of Clairvaux, whom we've met a number of times, the great mystic, along with the Paris mystics, those of the school of St. Victor, and along with mystical female writers, Hildegard of Bingen, for instance, who objected to this application of logic. They thought it playing God. They thought it arrogant. They thought it pompous. They preferred the quieter, the more peaceful, the more traditional means of biblical exegesis, spiritual reflection, and immediate divine inspiration. So, scholasticism equals logic, yes, means more than that, and there were people who objected.